Hi, this is Icon Art Radio. It's Bill Teeple, Alan Cobb, and Donna Colby. And here we are, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa. Iowa. We've got a quote from Gertrude Stein about Iowa.
Yes, it was a surprising thing to come across in this little book. Two men are named in this quote, and these were two friends of Gertrude Stein's that she had made in Paris. One was a writer and one an artist, and they were people she liked very much. So here's the quote. Gertrude Stein said, "I would like to have seen Iowa. Carl van Vechten and William Cook come from Iowa. You are brilliant and subtle if you come from Iowa, and really strange, and you live as you live, and you are always very well taken care of if you come from Iowa."
It's good to know. I'm glad we're all going to be very well taken care of.
And we live as we live.
Yes, and we're very strange.
Well, I like the combination.
I think it actually encapsulates it pretty well.
Yeah, brilliant and subtle and strange. I mean, that's a pretty good
well,
blend
the thing is
of
most,
characteristics.
Yeah, I find it interesting that Gertrude Stein, the sort of like hippest of the hip people of that era, mm-hmm. said that about Iowa.
Yeah.
Because normally that's not what the general public thinks about Iowa or says about Iowa, but I think actually it's not far off the mark.
Yeah. Well, and she was a very original thinker. You know, she never kind of went according to what was trendy. It was, she wanted to get to the core of things. And, you know, obviously her opinion of Iowa was just based on these two friends of hers who came from Iowa. And she saw something similar, I guess, in both of these people that she attributed to coming from Iowa. Maybe we all have that, and if Gertrude Stein had met any of us, we would have been her
good
friends.
You know, I've got this feeling, and it's becoming a little more clear as Icon unfolds, that Icon is responsible for tuning in to and expressing and framing something of the art spirit, I've said, of Iowa. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we're just creating something from nothing and trying to hype it or trying to pretend that we're something. I think there's actually something about what we're sitting on top of here and trying to give expression to. And that Gertrude Stein said that is kind of interesting because all those elements that you just described are mm-hmm. some of the things that I feel are associated with those of us in Iowa who have broken through the we didn't break through, we just sort of ended up here in Iowa for some reason. And this surface thing, just as the monoculture of corn was never what Iowa was in ancient times. It was like cedar forests, I believe.
And
what
prairie.
Iowa is and was and has been to the Native Americans is something. And then there's this monoculture that's glazed on top of that, and then we sort of, the world sort of, or the Americans tend to identify Iowa with that sort of like glazed over thing, so we think of pigs and corn. But for some reason, we've been drawn here, and I'm not about pigs and corn, mm-hmm. and there's a flavor in the land and the landscape and the nature of the place that has produced a style of thinking and living that's beyond just raising pigs and corn. And that's very interesting to me. And I find that having a center of for culture and where art expresses the depth of what's going on in a place, which we're doing, has mined some pretty interesting gems and is it's interesting territory.
Well, I think also another thing that's unique about Iowa and her Gertrude Stein's adjective she used of brilliant and subtle and strange, one of the things that sort of sets Iowa and all of these surrounding states apart from the more well-known cultural areas of the United States is that it's right in there's a kind of purity here because of its location. You know, it's kind of harder to get to and you don't find too many people. You find a lot of people moving to, settling from someplace else in a place like San Francisco or New York or even Chicago. But proportional to the rest of the country, there aren't as many people who decide out of the blue that where they want to move to is Iowa. And so the people who are drawn here are probably drawn here because of some openness of opportunity that, you know, it's a place that isn't so culturally defined as a lot of these other places where you're just kind of slipping into something that's already established. That's what I like about coming. That's why I came back here after moving away from Iowa and then coming back here again. I realized that what I liked about it, it wasn't as finished off as other places where you could, you know, step into something in progress, but we could be beginners here.
Yeah, my first impressions of the Midwest were based on movies and television and things, and I imagined big flat places where everything was kind of flat and boring. And growing up on the East Coast and, you know, being in the New England mountains and rivers and streams and the Maine coastline and things, I thought of terrain as being an essential quality, and that if it wasn't intrinsically convoluted and complicated and fascinating, that there's something missing. And then I lived in Switzerland and all over Europe, and that reinforced my thinking. And then I was in California and Malibu and the Sierras and things, which reinforced my thinking even more. But all along during those many years, I had met people from the Midwest. And the Midwest is a big area, and it encompasses, you know, Kansas and Nebraska and Oklahoma, but it also really encompasses Chicago and Michigan and the Dakotas almost, I mean, arguably, and Ohio and so on. And I actually, looking back, met quite a few people who were from Iowa. And I remember that they were from Iowa, and the other people I met from the Midwest, I don't remember where they were from. Hmm. In fact, my first roommate in prep school was from Davenport. And they all had a quality of kind of freshness about them, which I noticed. I wondered, you know, what it was, if it was they didn't have that sort of jaded quality of, you know, the giant cities on the East Coast and the West Coast. And maybe that, you know, has a lot to do with it. Life still has some connection to the land, and it still has some connection to nature and natural forces. We don't live exclusively in, you know, rectangular spaces and spend all, I mean, when I lived in New York, my apartment was on the 35th floor, and I commuted down 35 floors to the street, walked a short distance to a subway, where I went down another few floors and got on a train that was underground. I got off in Rockefeller Center, and the train had a stop right under in the building, really, that I worked in, on the 40th floor. So I went down 35 to 40 stories, and then up 40 to 45 stories somewhere else. And my commute was more vertical than it was horizontal. And you're in a container at all times. Hmm. You know, obviously, I didn't live in New York all the time. I lived in Vermont, and I was in upstate New York, and I was in the woods whenever I could be. But I think that a life here where the horizon isn't, you know, 50 feet away, and the sky is bigger than a cereal bowl, has a lot to do with it. And then also, Iowa terrain is in fact much more interesting than some of the flatter states. I've learned to see hills and valleys and riverbeds around, especially eastern Iowa, where you're not that far from the Mississippi. And the terrain is actually extremely beautiful. I mean, there's no reason not to go out and paint it. And I think that also makes Iowa a little bit richer than some of the other Midwestern states, which are, you know, more vast and more flat. And
well, the thing is that I think one of the things you said is significant, that the sky is bigger, mm-hmm. because you have the, you know, the horizon, you can see further to the horizon. There's a poet named Kathleen Norris who was living in New York City, and she inherited a house in South Dakota that had belonged to her grandparents, and nobody else in her family wanted this house, and she had really fond memories from childhood about this house, and she didn't want to just sell it to strangers. And so she finally made the decision, she and her husband, who was also a poet, to leave New York City and move to South Dakota and live in a small town there in this house. And all of her friends, her literary friends in New York, said her career was just going to go straight down the tubes. You know, this was like completely ridiculous choice to make. But she was not particularly famous before that point, and she actually became famous for writing a book called Dakota, where she talked about exactly what you were just talking about, the change in her consciousness when she began to live in a place with wide open spaces.
Yeah.
And being a poet, she wrote about, it's a prose book, but she wrote about it very lyrically. It's an absolutely beautiful book that even though it's about South Dakota, a lot of those same things are relevant to Iowa and made me appreciate Iowa a lot more after I read her poetic take on it. And
well, you know, before the show, we were talking a little bit about the moods, or as I prefer to call them, modes that we go through, kind of depending upon where we are in our daily routine. And I'm struck by how once I sit down on the couch, my whole being seems to fall into a particular mode of functioning, or maybe a small range of modes that doesn't seem to include actually doing anything. And if I get up and sit down in my office or sit at the dining room table, I'm in a completely different range of modes where I'll write things and I'll remember things that need to be done. And if I go out of the house, when I come back to the house, I bring with me a different set of modes where I'm thinking about things I will do that are more complicated and require more effort and so on. And I think we're tremendously affected by our immediate environment. It sort of determines what's possible in our funny little brains. Maybe I should speak for myself. But I think, you know, the natural landscape and the larger environment is just as important, if not more so. I mean, you can lock yourself up in your house and forget about the world, but when you go out into it, what you go into is going to have a tremendous, profound, and relatively consistent impact on what you're capable of doing, what you're capable of thinking, and where your imagination goes.
Which is why traveling is such a wonderful, invigorating experience. Like Anderson Cooper says on his CNN advertisements, he says, you can't just read about a place and watch it on TV. You have to go there and breathe the air and meet the people. And, you know, it's the only way you can know a place. And it's I used to read avidly about foreign countries. And because I had a good imagination, I thought that I really had a good idea of what it was like to be in that place, until I actually went to a lot of those places and found myself feeling completely different from the way I had imagined I would feel in those places. And it must be just exactly what we were just talking about, that the very molecules of the air and the smells and all of the sensory input and the way space is around you completely puts you in a different kind of mode of consciousness automatically.
What do you think about all this, Bill?
I'm in complete agreement.
Okay, well, that wraps up our show. And actually, we're only halfway through.
Well, bringing the whole thing back to art, I think that where an artist lives is highly relevant to the kind of art that is made. When these New York artists got turned on to Santa Fe. it produced a whole other kind of art, and they were opened up to the West. Coming from California and the West, what you're talking about, the open space, I don't know the squeezed in stuff so much, because I came from more open spaces. And
I remember going to Arizona. Was the first, my first long distance trip. I missed the Midwest. I just went from New York to Flagstaff. But I was utterly blown away by the space. I mean, it was unimaginable to me. And Arizona has a bigger sky than Iowa by quite a large margin. And in those days, dare I say it, you know, back in the 1960s, the air in Arizona was so clean that when you looked at a mountain range that was 150 miles away, it didn't look like a faint grayish blue, you know, ripple on the horizon. It looked like a photograph of a mountain range that was very small. And you couldn't tell the distance. It was impossible. It was just as clear and dark and detailed as something that was a mile away. And it's something you can't see anymore, unfortunately. If you go to Arizona now and look at those same mountain ranges, they're lost in the haze. But that was stunning. And the same thing in Colorado. I went to Boulder and lived there for a while. And I remember, you know, looking at these layers of mountains on a clear day when there wasn't any moisture in the air, which is fairly common in Colorado, and seeing them as like photographs stacked up behind each other, and you couldn't believe that there were that many layers of mountains and no sense of depth to it at all.
And the stars. It's hard to describe the experience of the stars out west, even today, compared to out here.
Yeah.
And I did a series of cloud drawings at one point. Mm-hmm. And I try to tell people that these clouds look the way they do in my drawings because they were drawn in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And the clouds here don't look anything like that, because the edges of the clouds in out west are absolutely sharp.
Yeah.
And there's this intense, like, electric blue behind it that you can't even describe.
And the clouds are real objects. They're real.
And out here, there's so much moisture in the air that the clouds are sort of, there's a haziness.
They're blurry.
There. And the edges are not clean.
Yeah.
And if you do it that way, people tell you you're not doing it right.
Right. So.
Well, and colors are more saturated too. And I remember driving across Montana, well, driving across the whole country one year in the early 1970s. And I had never been to that part of the country. And I remember Montana, which is called the Big Sky Country, I remember the enormous feeling of the sky, but also just what you were saying, the clouds were completely different from any clouds I had seen before. The color of the sky was so much more saturated, and also the colors in the landscape. It was September, and the wheat fields were golden, really huge wheat fields in both sides of the road. And then there were these like dark crimson weeds of some sort that were bordering the road in many places against this golden of the wheat fields. And then there was this pale blue-green tumbleweeds that would be floating across over this, and then this like sky that was almost indigo even in the daytime, and all of those colors combined together was just absolutely breathtaking.
Yeah.
The ride could not possibly have been more exciting, even though we were driving along an absolutely straight road that was mostly empty the whole time.
Yeah,
the clarity of the objects, this is the what we were describing. It's like there's been a lens or something that heightens the focal point of each object for you, so that every little point is sort of scintillating and clear. And we have that experience in California dramatically when the winds change and move from the offshore winds, which are carrying all the moisture. Because in Southern California, we get a fair amount of moisture in the air from the sea. and being a little bit closer to the tropical region. But when the winds shift off the desert,
the Santa
and
Ana's.
It's dry, it'll overnight go from, near the water, you don't have that thing that we're talking about in Arizona. You have more of the moisture in the air. But if the winds change, suddenly all that desert thing starts to happen in Southern California. And all of a sudden, everything is crystal clear.
Yeah.
And I used to love that experience.
Yeah, all of a sudden you can see Catalina and it looks like a giant ship on the horizon.
But you look at all the objects, the cars and the buildings and the streets and everything, and it's a different, completely different feeling about it.
I particularly miss the stars. And I have a telescope which I brought with me here to Iowa, and there really isn't much in the way of star to look at here. When I was in Reno, does it ring a million times?
there it goes.
Yeah.
Sorry,
everyone. I would have got that, except it's halfway across the room, but it's crystal clear.
Yeah. When I lived up at Lake Tahoe, we were at 7,500 feet to begin with, and we would drive up Mount Rose Pass, because we were in Incline Village, where Mount Rose Pass comes over Mount Rose Highway. And we drive up to the pass, which was 9,000 feet, and there is just nothing in the air, absolutely nothing. The stars are right in your face. And it was just absolutely wonderful. It gives you a whole different feeling of what the planet Earth is and what's happening out there. Mm. And you know, a few stars in a misty sky are beautiful, but when the Milky Way is so bright and such a distinctive band of light across the sky that you can read by it without any moon, that is really something.
Well, what's remarkable, here we are telling all of these stories that took place like 40 or so years ago, and they're still filling us, even in the telling of the stories, they're filling us with the emotions that we felt when we were actually having that experience, which is another relevant thing, I think, to the topic of being both a traveler and an artist, that whether we're traveling to a foreign land or we're traveling to another part of the U.S. or we're just going outside in a different season in our own backyard, we're gathering these amazing visual impressions and other sensory impressions that feed into who we are as an artist. And there's that kind of blend of experiences that any individual has, and then in any location like Fairfield, for example, where there's a lot of people who have moved here from other parts of the country or other parts of the world and brought their experiences and their impressions all to the same place and interacting with each other, what we wind up with is some marvelous creative process that's just always going on and blending in new ways. And to go back to Gertrude Stein's quote we read earlier about her impression of Iowa because of these two people she knew from there, who she met in Paris, it just, to me, that just represents how anybody's description of anything is going to be colored by all of these various, their own specific associations with the place, and also is going to be different if they gave a description of that place today and 5 years from now. I think I'm going around in circles.
Well, the thing is that what I find interesting is Gertrude Stein in this like coolest art capital of the world in 1905 or whenever it was he wrote that. These were two guys from Iowa, but they were drawn to that place. So just staying in Iowa is maybe not all there is to do. And maybe going out to find your fortune and become famous and go to where it's happening is not all there is to do. That this quote kind of brings up the point of valuing both angles, which is what I think you were talking about, and how valuable travel is for everyone's education, but particularly for artists. If an artist, I believe, and my theory and teaching is to become the most expanded artist that I could be, which means going through and experiencing the world through all the different colored glasses, the rose and the green and the gold and all of that, so that you can feel those flavors and feel the relative illusion that we're moving through in all their its glorious flavors, while not forgetting what essentially is witnessing the whole thing, and to pulsate and fluctuate between the witness and the essential what of the universe moving through these flavors, and then we just talk about it, just like Gertrude Stein does, and all of the as artists we talk about it, and then we celebrate what it is to be a living being in the universe.
And what you have to say about it can often be said better in one place or another. Like Grant Wood came from Iowa, went to Paris, spent some time there, only to discover after being there a while that where he wanted to be to say what he wanted to say best through his art was back in Iowa.
And his message was a message of the value of regionalism. In other words, but tempered by expanded awareness. In other words, he couldn't have done what he did, and I don't think that he would have said that he could have done what he did if he hadn't expanded his awareness by going to Paris and being exposed to the great artists of the time and the new forms, and then came back with that filled his cup and created a consummate vehicle for expressing, and then done it in the context of Iowa. And he wouldn't have wanted everybody to talk about Iowa. He would want people to become expanded, go to Flagstaff, go to Iowa, go to the Dakotas, and then sing that song.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.